Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You know, one of the stories that came up last week that Evan and I were checking out that I felt an emotional attraction to, I think we all did, was the sad, untimely death of Mark Pavlich, a former New York Ranger, of course, better known for being on the 1980 USA hockey team. And he had the assist to Eruzione for the game-winning goal and unfortunately passed away a few days ago in a mental health institution, I believe in Minnesota, where he spent the far majority of his post-playing career. And I'd read a number of the stories about Mark, who's described by most people that know him as the kindest, softest, most gentle guy. And he became a different person later in life and became physically violent, emotionally violent, and no one ever could ever really figure out, you know, kind of the causal effect or how to control it. Barry Beck, the one-time face of the New York Rangers, or among the faces of the Rangers in the early 80s, came out with a blistering Facebook post yelling at the New York Rangers, the NHL as a body, and Team USA Hockey, believing that Mark's mental health deteriorated, much like many football players have, as a result of hits to the head and CTE. Joining us now on the phone is a former New York Ranger and a guy who was voted as one of the top 100 Rangers of all time, and it's my pal Tommy Laidlaw. Tom, Carton, and Roberts on the Fan in New York City. How you been, pal?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Great, and thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us here. You were a teammate of Mark's, I think, for his entire Ranger career, pretty close to it. Give people an idea of the Mark Pavlich you knew as a younger guy. We'll start there.
Well, first of all, great guy. He just, you know, it's funny. He was that Minnesota kid who really didn't care about New York City, didn't care about getting all dressed up. In fact, we were telling stories this morning how he would always wear a pair of corduroy pants and a flannel shirt to practice all the time. And we had a dress code that you had to have a tie and jacket on when he went to games. So he'd wear the same flannel shirt and corduroy pants and just put a jacket on and a tie. So it was like five different colors all mixed up. And he just, everybody kind of laughed about it, giggled, and that was just Pav. And he could care less. He didn't get wrapped up in the whole New York City thing. He was a fun guy, great teammate, incredibly hard worker. He's one of those guys who's always the first on the ice to work on his game. He wanted to be good at what he did. He didn't care who else saw what he was doing. He just knew what he had to do to be good and wanted to do it. And tough, too. He's a small guy. We'd go into places like Philadelphia where, you know, the intimidation factor was huge and didn't bother. In fact, it didn't bother him, but he really gave it back to him as well. So, you know, great memories of him as, like I said, a great teammate and just a good person, too. So when you hear all the stuff that's happened to him in the past, in a little while here, it's a pretty sad story.
Sure. Like, listen, we all recognize there's, you know, you guys have to kind of have two personalities. There's who you are as a professional hockey player, and then there's who you are off the ice, family guy, kids, you know, friends, that kind of stuff. So we all respect that there are, that you guys live two lives, essentially. All athletes do. Was he consistent throughout his career as who he was off the ice, as just a regular kind of hard-nosed blue-collar guy that wasn't all that interested in the trappings of the New York nightlife and fame and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, he never changed. You know, he had one one game where he scored five goals, and we were joking around about it this morning, talking about him. And when he scored the five goals, when he scored a goal, he would just line up at center ice or go back to the bench like it was just another day at the office. He really didn't know. Everybody else was going crazy and throwing hats. It was this big event, scored five goals in one game. But the mark, he was like, okay, well, I'm supposed to do that. You know, that's my job. I'm supposed to score a goal. So he was great. He was always the same. Yep.
Did he talk, because he's, you know, legendary, and everybody on that Olympic team is, because that's one of the most epic moments in sports history. Did he talk a lot about that experience in the locker room? Was that something he would share stories about?
No, Mark would talk about fishing, Bob Dylan playing his guitar, laugh and joke around, but he wasn't. It's funny, like he worked so hard at his game to be great, but I never got the sense that he really loved the game. Like, you know, I grew up in Canada. I wanted to play hockey since the time I was 6 years old. And I know Mark was motivated and everything, but it's not that he didn't love playing, but it wasn't like it was all of his life. In fact, it was a job to him. He worked hard at his craft to become a great NHL player, and that's what he was. But like he retired from the game early. He just didn't want to put up with stuff anymore, so he just left the game. And we weren't surprised at all. Like, a lot of guys would not have done that, but when Mark did it, it wasn't a surprise. That's the way Mark was. If he didn't like it, he was just going to move on and do something else.
So let's fast forward. You know, post playing career, I read a huge expose on him a couple years back, in which he had a neighbor that was actually a fishing buddy of his, and he was physically violent with the neighbor. His family, his sister, most notably, recognized that he was becoming a different guy, wasn't the Mark that she grew up with, that all you guys all rave about as a guy. When did you kind of become aware that there were stories out there that he was kind of becoming this isolated hermit in Minnesota with bouts of violence?
Well, as far as being the isolated hermit, as you call it, we knew that that was going on with him anyway. But that, we weren't surprised. We didn't think something was wrong with that. That was just Mark Pavlich.
Okay.
The fact that he would live out in the woods didn't signal anything wrong at all. Once we heard about the incident with his neighbor, apparently they were fishing, and I guess the story is he thought the neighbor spiked his beer or something, so he attacked him with a metal pole. And so when we heard that, you know, at first you hear the story, well, that's not Mark. And then you start to hear, you know, that he got, when they went into prison, they determined that he was mentally unfit to stand trial. So now he's, okay, there's some real issues here. You started hearing through Barry and through posts that his sister would make on Facebook that there's, you know, a whole history of other incidents leading up to that particular incident. And, you know, obviously there was some concern. And the family really believed that it was CTE, you know, coming from a lot of concussions and head injuries that he had when he played, which may be the case, but we don't know that. So
after he leaves the NHL at a young age, like you mentioned, did he have relationships with some of his former teammates, or did it just kind of immediately go away?
Well, that's a great question, because it really never changed. But like, his relationships with us was great. He's a fantastic guy, but it wasn't like a bunch of guys, like we'd all keep in touch with each other and get on the phone every once in a while, laugh and joke around, have a few beers, whatever. Marcus just wasn't like that. It was like, okay, I'm here, but it wasn't like he had to get, they had reunions for the 80 Olympic team, from what I understand. They didn't know whether he was going to show up or not sometimes. And
right.
Sometimes he would show up and sometimes he didn't. And then, again, nobody really worried about it that much. That was just Mark. That's the way it wasn't that big of a deal. Even winning the 80 Olympic deal was, yeah, it's fantastic and it's an honor and everything. But it wasn't like something that was going to change his life. He didn't live his life as an 80 gold medal Olympic hockey player. He lived his life as Mark Pavlich, the fisherman, the hunter. And that's the way he wanted to, live his life.
Talking to Tommy Laidlaw, one of the 100 greatest Rangers of all time and a teammate of Mark Pavlich, we're trying to figure out, you know, the story here. I know Barry Beck is livid, saying that hockey's kind of put its head in the sand. They had a settlement a couple years back with a couple hundred players about CT, and they wrote a big check, etc. But, you know, in reading about Mark's story, you know, he lost his second wife under tragic circumstances. She fell off like a second-story balcony at their home. And he dealt with heartache, for sure. So as you now try to come to terms with the loss, and you read what Barry wrote, do you think CT is possible? I know when you guys played in, you know, late 70s, early 80s, there was a lot less interest in worrying about a guy getting a hit to the head or playing with a concussion, et cetera. So I'm sure all you guys did. But are you more along the lines of where Barry's going, that his death is somehow attributable to a brain injury he may have suffered while playing? Or do you think he was just maybe a complicated guy who, you know, became depressed after losing his wife in such a tragic circumstance and, you know, never kind of recovered from it?
Sure. Well, listen, CTE can certainly be part of it. And I'm assuming we'll find out here some of the what's going on if they do an autopsy with him. I'm not totally with Barry. I have total respect for Barry. He was a captain. He's a friend of mine. You know, as a team player, you know, you kind of hold those guys in high regard. You know, there's always going to be a bond between all of us that played together. That's just the way we live our lives. But I don't necessarily agree with it. Barry's really taken the stance that the league and the Players Association and alumni and everything has kind of turned their back on players. And I just don't buy that at all. You know, Barry's a fantastic person. He's dealt with tragedy himself. He lost his son recently up in Canada. And he's been over in China and kind of away from the hockey world here. But the hockey world does so many great things for other people and particularly for other hockey players all the time. But it's always done behind the scenes and very discreetly. The league and the Players Association puts millions of dollars into the alumni and the alumni. But what's a tricky thing here, like in Mark's case, the alumni can't go to Mark and say, we need to get you help. There's laws and everything. He doesn't have to.
Sure.
He's not part of any association or anything now. He had to come to the alumni and asked for help, which he finally did, and they went above and beyond. Glenn Healy, another former New York Ranger, runs the alumni now, and he did a fantastic job of getting him help, you know, especially legal help to move the process along so he could ultimately get out of prison. So I don't buy the notion that we're not taking care of his former players. Listen, our pension is terrible. But that's our issue from way back when we played. We should have taken care of that when we played ourselves as players. To complain about that now or those kinds of things now, you know, 30 or 40 years after we played, it's just, you know, the league really doesn't owe us anything. That's how most of us look at it. We played. It was a dream come true to play in the NHL. We were paid to do it. And then it's time to move on, and now the next group of players come.
And I assume every one of you guys would say the same thing. You know, if someone had told you, look, there's the possibility of getting, you know, CT or shortening your lifespan. When you're 18 years old, you're going to say, I'm playing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. 10 times over.
Right.
Yeah. And I'd even do it now. Like, listen, I've had many concussions, and I'm assuming I've got CT. I think that's just the way it is. But would I change anything? No, I'd play longer. I wouldn't change a bit. Yeah.
Right. Well, you can't play still, right? I mean.
Well, I'm probably in better shape now, Craig, than I was.
You might be. He's a hockey player through and through, man.
Well, yeah, most hockey players go through that. Most hockey players, when they retire, usually go through that first. They gain 20 pounds real quick, and then they recognize, wait, I'm 38 years old. I got to do something to stay in shape.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, so when, you know, it's funny. You know, I'm drawn to the story because of the mental health aspect of it. And I have great empathy now for people that go through currently, you know, things that I believe Mark most likely went through. And I bring it up because having had my own problems, you know, I've developed this empathy for people and not just judging a person by what I read in a newspaper article or what, you know, what a stat line has to say and trying to figure out, you know, who was he? And yes, he did something terribly wrong and he paid a price for it. And, you know, the behavior that, you know, took place with that neighbor's terrible. You know, he changed the course of that guy's life, for sure. But I don't think it's as simple as Mark Pavlich is a bad guy, throw him away, and let's move on. And I think we have a tendency to do that sometimes. And I don't think that's proper or fair when you acknowledge something happened inside his brain that changed who he was. I believe that till I'm dead.
Oh, totally. There's no question. Because, again, the person I know from back when I played with him was that kind, motivated, great, just great guy. There's just no way he would do that to somebody if there wasn't something wrong with him. There's no question. Listen, I think a big part of it is, you know, guys like yourself or myself, or you see a lot of people in the military, more men in particular, not just limited to men, but speaking out more and saying, listen, I have some things that I have to deal with. Like, I think it's great that you reach out and you say, listen, I have things that I have to deal with. I've made mistakes in the past and I have to deal with it. I think it's important then so that the other people that maybe don't have that voice can say, well, if he's speaking out about it, then it's all right for me to seek help as well. You know, I think that's a big part of it, Mark. And it's a pride issue, too. There's a lot of guys that are in all, you know, businesses and sports and everything that are hurting out there. But they feel like, well, if I reach out to somebody, it makes it look like I'm weaker somehow.
Right.
Instead of it more being accepted for a person to say, listen, there's something wrong with me. I need help. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And people need to know that there's nothing wrong with doing
that. Yeah, I mean, it's like something you said earlier. What are you supposed to do if the guy doesn't want the help, right? I mean, we could try to make it comfortable to ask for help, but if the guy doesn't want it, how far can you go? I don't know the answer. I'm asking it because, you know, I'm sure there's people listening who have somebody in their life who they say, this person needs help. It's obvious to me. But if it's not obvious to that person and they're not willing to accept the help, what are you supposed to do?
Well, it's a great question because as a player, it's a, I can use his name because it's a well-publicized story. It's Joe Murphy, who was a great player, like I think his first overall pick in the draft. And he's up, up in Canada now, and they reached out to him. He's living on the streets. The family thinks it was because of CT, the same thing. And he's living out the streets, just wandering the streets all over, just like some homeless person would. And they reached out, and they got him help, and they got him into a clinic and everything, but then he left. He just didn't want the help.
Right.
He wanted to live out on the streets. You're right. You can't. There's other stories about guys I won't use these names because they're more private. I had one other player that was they found living out the streets in Los Angeles. And this guy was had been a good player, had been a general manager in the league. He just decided he just didn't want to live the normal life anymore, want to live in the streets. They reached out to him and said, listen, we'll help you. He said, no, I want to stay here.
Wow.
And so he stayed there.
Well, just real quick, I'm not the biggest hockey guy, so I'm talking out of my ass here a little bit. But when you're in L.A., were you there when Gretzky showed up, or did you go there when Gretzky was already there?
I was there already when he got traded there. Yep.
So when you're just minding your business, and this is not today's world of social media and people find out stuff immediately, how did you find out that Gretzky had been traded to the Kings where you were playing?
Well, that was a great day. So it was during the summer. I was back here in New York. I think it was like August 9th or something like that. And ESPN was a big thing back then. So ESPN kept running the story. The rumors were started early in the morning that there was a rumor Wayne Gretzky was getting traded. And back then when that was going, you go, no way. There's just no way it's happened. And then as the day went on, well, there's more details coming out about the trade. Then all of a sudden you think, well, this could actually happen. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I loved playing in New York. And so I went to L.A. It was great there. It was fantastic. But it was kind of like nobody really cared about us out there. And all of a sudden now you're thinking, I'm going to be playing with Wayne Gretzky. Like, I remember thinking I felt like a better hockey player all of a sudden because he was coming along. So it was an exciting day, yeah.
And who keeps the puck on the assist that you had in which he tied the scoring record? Does he keep that puck or do you get that puck?
Yeah, it sure wasn't me. I think the Hockey Hall of Fame had it. Actually, that was pretty crazy too. You know, that was funny because I tell that story where it was leading up to this. Gordie Howe's traveling around with us because Wayne's trying to beat Gordie's record.
Right.
And Wayne didn't score for a couple of games, so it's building and building. You know, now we finally go into Edmonton where Wayne had played bulk of his career, and we have a 4-on-4. And it's like a Hockey Hall of Fame out there, except for me. Like Wayne Gretzky's out there, Mark Messier, Paul Coffey, Gary Curry, all these guys. So it's a 4-on-4. We're in their zone, and we've got three good offensive players on, and I'm the defensive guy that kind of, they screw up on their form. So nobody's paying attention to me on Edmonton. And Wayne gets the puck along the boards, and I'm standing in the slot all by myself. And, of course, Wayne finds me, gets me the puck. Now I'm in panic mode because I'm thinking, I don't know how to score goals. I scored 25 goals in 10 years. So Bernie Nichols was getting covered by this guy off the side, so I passed to Bernie, and somehow he tips it in and scores. And we're dying laughing after that. Bernie comes, everybody else is cheering about Wayne scoring a goal, and Bernie comes to me like, Laidlaw, what were you thinking about passing the puck to me? I was covered. So hey, Craig, I got a question for you.
Yeah, go.
So, this always bothered me. So what grown man calls himself Boomer?
Very good question. Very good question. The story that he has always gone with is that he was named Boomer when he was still in the womb, and that he his mom, who obviously passed away when he was very young, could feel him kicking like a little boomer. So they nicknamed him before he came out. And then he was actually named after his dad. So he's Norman Julius Esiason, but they gave him the name before he was born. But I'm with you. What kind of guy's got the nickname Boomer?
Yeah, this big Norwegian guy with a big head, too. And he's picking on you in the morning all the time, too. I hear him.
Yeah,
he's picking on you.
Well, listen, I'm like, the old furniture.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, we're going to, you and I have played hockey together. So if we get that that game going again, hopefully in a couple months, I expect to see you out there, and I look forward to it.
I would miss it for the world. Evan, good luck working with Craig.
Thank you.
Tough job for you.
There you go.
Thanks, man.
Be good, Tommy. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, guys. Talk to you,
Tom Laidlaw, former New York Ranger, just sharing some thoughts on Mark Pavlich, who passed away inside a mental health hospital a few days ago. And I just wanted to get a little insight. He's the top 100 Ranger of all time. Because the story resonates. And everyone listening knows somebody in your life that's got some type of mental health issue. And without being on a soapbox about it, we got to talk up about it more. There's no shame in admitting there's something going on. And to be completely transparent, if you had asked me 3 years ago, I probably would have laughed in your face. I would have said, what are you talking
about? That's
why. How weak are you to need a therapist or that kind of stuff? But personal experience, grown a lot. I can tell you that therapy does help. And if you're dealing with a problem that it's okay to speak up and say something. And it may save your life. It may save someone else's.
Then what do you do? Because you're the perfect person to ask them.
Sure.
Because you, if someone came to you and they did 3 years ago and said, you have this problem, you're like, I don't have a problem.
I deny
what
it.
Do you do? Then, but what do you do if you're the loved one?
It's
like, what's the answer?
It's the toughest question I could ever answer. Because while I am on a really good path today, and I feel really good mentally, my mental health is very good today. And I hope it stays that way. The damage that I caused to those people, the people that loved me the most, the people that support me the most, friends, family, that's the biggest damage I caused. And that's very hard. It's funny. I don't talk a lot about it at home. Maybe I talk about it here because I'm more comfortable just talking here. That's the hardest part of me coming back. And our show being successful and, you know, making a living again and all that stuff. The hardest part of all of it is living every day with the knowledge that my friends and family were there for me. And I didn't either accept their help, want their help, look forward to their help, reach out for them for help. And they're the ones that are hurt far more than I hurt myself. And I obviously did tremendous damage to myself. And that's the hardest part to live with.
But here's the thing.
It is. But my message would be, had I been either brave enough, I don't want to say man enough because I hate that term. Are you man enough? Like, women deal with mental health issues and they're brave enough to come forward, you know, when they do. So I don't want to say man enough, but I think you get what I'm getting at. You know, I wish that I was brave enough, man enough, open enough, honest enough back then to stop what everyone saw taking place. Yeah, but I wasn't.
But right
and
now,
that's the thing that kills me the most.
It's sad, but you're alive. And there are those that never recognize what you recognize.
Yes.
And they're not.
But look,
that's the part that's so tough, I think, for a family member,
sure.
Especially if you're in a situation where, look, now you can look back on it and you have lessons from it. You can help other people. Because every time we talk about it, you know it helps other people. That's
yeah.
And
I own that. I own that. Just being selfish, talking about me and why I do the Saturday show, like, no one's right. Making me do that. You know, I do have community service I have to do, which starts later on this year officially. But I'm doing it because I want to do it, because I have a responsibility to do it. You know, but I'm also, you know, I talk knowing that people I love are listening. So I try to sometimes be careful about that. So I apologize for that. You know, I'm lucky I'm here. You know, I was ready to not be here. I was, you know, which is why when I told you I want to know how Mark Pavlich passed away. You know, when I see Chris Cornell take his own life, I get it.
Right.
Like, I was going to jump. I was going to.
That's why it's so scary, because if you have someone you love who needs help, they don't accept it, what are you supposed to do? Because you see stories where it does become too late.
It puts your loved ones in the worst possible position because they're helpless. There's nothing they can do.
Right.
And that's the sad reality. Now I'm talking about what we're dealing with an adult. There's more you can do, I think, with a child.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have more control over the whereabouts of that of a kid. But even that's tough.
Sure.
You know, there are moments where the kid's going to be alone. You know, and that's the hardest part of it. You know, I'm convinced without knowing that Mark took his own life. I'll just go out and say it. I will not be surprised if that's the story.
Right.
And I resonate with that because, you know, I lived it. And I'm sorry to bring the show down. I apologize for that. But I think it's, you know, it is an important conversation now. Like, people say all the time, like when I read the columns like Marchand and, you know, Raceman and the crap on Twitter, you know, like, they have no idea. You know, oh, is Craig the same he was? Or, you know, he made fun of a caller. He took a shot at this person. Oh, he didn't learn anything. Go F yourself. You have no idea. I have learned. I've learned a lot. I am a different person. I think this show is a lot different. I would never have this segment 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But I can tell you how scared I was when I was sitting on a chairlift, you know, in British Columbia, and I was going to jump off of it. You know, the thing I told you, the one criticism in my entire life, professionally, that will bother me till I'm dead, was Bob Raceman in the Daily News. I'm sure you could find it. When he watched the documentary, and I think he's in it, possibly. I don't know if he is or not. He was critical of the manner in which I was going to do that. Like he thought, oh yeah, you know, he said something to the effect, not direct words, like, oh, he couldn't have used the gun or taken a pill. He's got to jump off a chairlift. Like, really? Like, if you want to criticize our show, we're big boys. It's what we signed up for. If you want to say I suck, great. You don't think I deserve the second chance? I actually respect that. I get it. You know, many people don't. I totally understand that line of thinking. If you don't like what I do, what we do, I am okay with all that criticism. Like, lately I've been taking shots at Marshan because he's been taking shots at me in his articles. So to me, that's part of this game we play. Did it piss me off some of the stuff? Yeah. At the end of the day, do I lose sleep over it? Not an ounce. Because I deal with stuff far more serious. But when you're going to criticize, you know, the method of suicide, like what? And that's why people don't talk about it or come forward. I have a tough time even saying the word. And maybe my situation was maybe a little different. I never had the feeling of not wanting to live. My feeling was I wanted to jump.
Right.
But I never wanted to stop living. It's a weird, they're mutually exclusive the way my brain processed it. I recognize to most of you it's one and the same. But yeah, but you got to talk about this stuff. You have to. There's one thing I tell my kids all the time. Good, bad, and different. Open up, talk. If it's not to me, to someone. Share how you're feeling with somebody. So when I read the Mark Pavlich story, I don't know Mark. I never met him. I couldn't tell you a thing about him other than 1980 hockey.
Right.
I didn't even know he played for the Rangers when the story first came out. But it resonated with me because his story is going to be a one-line sentence. You know, crazy guy does blank or violent former hockey player. And I don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think we spend enough time, you know, dealing with mental health issues. And I know an entertaining talk radio show is not the place to do it. I know half people listening right now are like, shut up, Carton. Move on. We don't want to hear about it. I know I'm going to get that on Twitter. I know it. But I don't care. You know, I've been afforded the opportunity to come back and do a show. And that means be real. And that means a lot of times we're going to have a lot of fun, like the segment before the last one. And a lot of times we're going to talk about stuff that's hard to talk about and hard to listen to. And so be it. If you don't like it, I've said it a million times. Click. You have the power. As soon as you don't hear whatever I have to say, turn us off. I dare you to. Go ahead. Go find something else to listen to. But we made one promise. We're going to be real. And when stuff like this comes up, I'm going to be real about it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And I'm not going to pretend I didn't live through it. Now, for me, it was almost, as an adult, all self-inflicted. I had other things happen to me as a kid that I processed poorly. You know, listen, I was sexually assaulted as a kid. You know, that's, I don't tell that story glibly. I'm not flipping about it. I never talk about it. I went 40 years and never mentioned it. You know, and that's not the causal effect of me going to prison by a long shot. But it's a cause effect of how I process emotions and share emotions and deal with things. And I'm not going to shy away from that. I can't. It wouldn't be true to who I want to be. It wouldn't be right for my kids, my wife, and my family. Because I live every day recognizing the hurt I caused in other people. And I live with that every day. It's a burden I carry every day. And it kills me every day to know that I negatively impacted other people's lives. And I'm not talking about financially, but that too. But emotionally, the people that had my back, who now question, am I worthy of being friends with? Or, you know, related to? You know, I did that. And I live with that burden. And I got nobody to blame for that but myself. So my hope is that hearing me talk about my issues, hearing the issues, you know, Barry Beck coming out talking about, the issues of Mark Pavlich, having other well-known people share their issues with mental health, I think is a really good thing. And I think we need to do more of it. And I'd leave you with just saying, there's no shame in it. You know, I lived with shame for such a long time because of things that happened to me when I was younger and the things I did as an adult. And it's shameful, a lot of it. You know, both the on the receiving end and the things I did, shameful, you know. But I got to talk about it. If I don't talk about it, then no good comes from it. And hopefully, if you know, we always say, hey, if you save one person, Man, I've been blessed that dozens of people have come through this radio show and radio station because of the gambling stuff I talk about that I've directed right to Dan Trillaro, who runs 800 Gambler, who we helped. Like real living, tangible human beings who send me emails. Thank you for connecting me to Dan. My life has been forever altered in a good way. So I'm going to always talk about mental health on this show. Not like this. This is a one-off. Just kind of happened, as you know, organically. We didn't plan to talk about this. We booked Tom Laidlaw 5 minutes before he came on because he and I have a mutual friend, and Tom and I have played some hockey together the few times I've played hockey. And he's a stand-up, straight-up guy who played with Mark. So I thought it'd be, you know, powerful to tell that story. So,
well, you know what's valuable listening to you and listening to him and hearing that story is for guys and gals like me identifying it and listening. Because I don't know if I would have picked up on someone I know or love having that issue.
Sure.
And now you try to pay more attention to it and understand it a lot more. That's at least one of the things I get out of hearing you and hearing the unfortunate story that happened to him is that we can help by listening and identifying if someone we love has an issue.
Listen, we've done, Tommy, how many? 9 shows now. Hello, my name is Craig. About 9 or 10, right?
Something yeah, like that sounds about right.
So we've had a number of people like myself who are compulsive gamblers, right? All very emotional stories, like tragic stories. Some have, you know, regained life, etc. The single most powerful moving show that we've done yet, and it'll stay that way, I think, for a long time, is not me telling stories. We brought on the father of an addicted gambler. And hearing the relative, this guy did nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong, and his son became an addicted gambler. And he told what it was like being a father of an addicted gambler and what that pain is like. And that, to me, was, you know, tears rolling down your face.
I completely grabbed. Listen, because, every show you did, and that was the one that affected me the most, thinking, what would I do if I'm in that situation? You heard, what are you supposed to do?
You heard what I said to him at the end of the show. I apologized to him. I don't know the man. I've never met him. And he's, why would I apologize to him? Because I was apologizing to my dad and my family, because I see it from their eyes more and more every day. And, you know, I got to live with that. But I created it, so I will live with it and do the best I can to repair it. So that's what that is.
It's Carton and Roberts on The Fan, WFAN, WFAN-FM, and WFAN.com. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.